You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we oppress you with pleasure. And if you get so much pleasure that you feel so oppressed this week, please tell a friend or leave a 5-star review about how pleasurable of an experience visiting the midside here today was. I expect some pretty creative reviews out there about the pleasure that we have given to you, especially when you hear the story that I'm referencing right now. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, if you could oppress people with any pleasure, what would that pleasure be? The pleasure to play Candyland?
What?
I'm stalling.
Do people still play Candyland?
Yes.
Children have iPads now.
They haven't made a Candyland app?
I don't know. Talk about worst app on the planet. I oppress people with things like when we go to restaurants and stuff, what feels really oppressive is when the chef takes pride in their work and makes the food really good and then gets pleasure out of making really good food that I get to eat. That's really just, emphasizing this chef-centric culture where the chef gets to decide what food is good and I don't. So that really pisses me off.
I know you're being satirical right now, but
what?
Gastropubs are actually like that, where the chef refuses to change the ingredients.
Don't get me wrong. There are postmodern restaurants where the food is fucking terrible and the chef refuses to acknowledge it. And there are restaurants where the food may be good, but it's highly pretentious, like that show on Netflix where the guy like takes tomatoes and shapes them into strawberries so that when you cut into it, you're surprised that it's actually a tomato.
I don't even know what to say to that, so I'm just going to introduce the person who's also joining us this trip from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, what pleasure would you oppress people with?
The pleasure I oppress people with every day is the pleasure of math, because I don't have a student-centric approach. I don't do whatever the student wants me to do. It's all centered around me teaching them math in an efficient, thorough way, and I do it purely for my own selfish benefit and pleasure, and it really downgrades the role of the student in the process. Obviously,
and let me tell you,
if
you tutor and you have a student-centered approach, and you do what they want, and you're thorough and efficient, that's not good.
You don't last at the job with that.
Yeah, that could get you in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Am I talking about sex?
Yeah.
That was the joke.
That was the joke.
All that sex you're not supposed to have with your students.
But they asked for it.
What's the Jim
Norton
line about?
She was asking for an officer.
The only two things Jared Fogel had to do in his entire job. don't get fat and don't fuck kids.
Yeah. That was a good one. Yeah, Daniel is referring to Jim Norton's new stand-up special. What's it called, Daniel, his new special?
It's called Jim Norton is a Sick Bastard.
Yeah, it's probably what it should be called.
I don't know what it's called. Just look for Jim Norton on Netflix.
It's very funny if you want to listen to a man talk about blowing trannies as long as you don't look at their feet.
What? Because that's the one part they didn't bother changing properly.
Right, he's like that'll remind you that it's a man. So don't blow them.
The D in your mouth will not remind you that it's a man.
Right.
Okay.
That's what he said. So
okay. Thank you, Jim Norton.
Yeah. All right. Other things that we want to thank people for that don't make any sense are whatever the news stories are every week. So let's talk about that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad.
Sesame Street got a new puppet this week. Meet Julia, a Muppet with autism. Wait, are the puppets on Sesame Street Muppets?
Yes.
Are they all Muppets? Is Big Art a Muppet?
Yeah, yes. They refer to them as like, oh, here's our new Muppet friend. Like, yeah. They'll say that. Same with, what's it called? Like the Muppets show.
Well, how come?
Yes, that's the Muppets show.
I'm not going to get into it anymore.
Just in case you're knowing Muppets about the metaphysical reality of that universe, like Kermit the Frog is known as a Muppet, and he is a distinct species from the live-action people.
Thank you, James. Kermit the Frog isn't an actual frog. What?
No, I'm saying within the like logic of the show, he's not referred to as just a frog. He's referred to as a Muppet frog.
Thank you.
Look, it's I knew
Kermit and Miss Piggy
thing.
Were Muppets, but I didn't know that like Elmo and Big Bird and Snuffleupagus were also Muppets.
Yes.
Why do you mean that condescending yes? Like this is everyday knowledge that a fucking third grader knows, which they probably do.
Because we expected you to do show prep for this, Daniel. You didn't look this up.
How deep do you want me to dig into the Muppet epistemology?
Well, I don't know. We're looking at the metaphysical nature of the psychology of Muppets to know if they're autistic or not. I think you should at least know what they're called.
Jesus Christ. Julia is the newest Muppet. All Muppets are puppets, but not all puppets are Muppets.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say.
Dang,
you read my mind. They're rectangles and squares.
Yeah, Mr. Smarty Pants. Okay, so the little girl Muppet with red hair and a favorite bunny clutched in her hand has been on Sesame Street's online digital storybook since 2015, but now she's making her TV debut, surrounded by everyone's favorite gang on HBO and PBS. The show's creators hope the new character will help children better understand playmates who have autism, which is affecting more and more American kids. Children with autism will also have a Muppet they can identify with. Very important. In Julia's first episode, she experiences a bit of a glitch, while meeting Big Bird. When the two are introduced by pals Abby and Elmo, Julia is hesitant to shake Big Bird's hand. He's sad and worried that Julia doesn't like him, but Elmo explains that Julia has autism, so she, quote, does things a little differently. So, Justin, Muppet with autism. What the fuck?
I don't think she's autistic. I think she just didn't want to shake his hand because he's a giant fucking bird. Like, if Big Bird came up to you on the street, would you really shake his fucking hand? Or wouldn't you just be like, are you a Muppet? Or are you a puppet? Or are you a guy dressed like a giant bird who thinks he's a Muppet or thinks he's a puppet? Like, in what world would you shake Big Bird's hand?
His wing.
Whatever the fuck he is. Does this just mean I'm autistic?
It means you're afraid of avian bird flu.
Look at him, you fucking tall motherfucker. Like, what is he?
Ooh.
Yeah, height privilege. But here's the thing. Aren't all Muppets autistic? I mean, look at how Kermit the Frog gets excited about things. Isn't that not autism?
It's true, he shakes violently.
Yeah. I think Jim Henson was just against vaccination. Or no, he was pro-vaccination, right? Because vaccination...
Oh,
vaccination.
Messed up the joke. Oh, you had one job.
It's because I'm autistic.
It's, that was really... I watched the clip with Julia in it, and if they hadn't said, this Muppet has autism, I wouldn't have known which Muppet had autism. They all act like they're autistic. It's all the exact fucking same. She just carries around a bunny that makes her autistic. She doesn't want to shake people's hands. That makes her Howie Mandel. Doesn't make her autistic.
This actually reminds me of like the fact that this story actually says like that autism rates are really going up. And I thought, wait, what? And I looked it up, and it turns out that that's at least the diagnoses of autism are really going up. And it just made me wonder, like, are they actually going up, or did we just used to say like, oh, that man's strange. Like, we wouldn't say he's autistic. We just said, like, oh, yeah, that's just Joe. That's just the way he is. You know, he carries a bunny around with him and won't shake people's hands. It kind of makes me wonder, like, where is this coming from? Or is this actually is there actually something in our culture that leads to a higher instance of this, you know, mental disorder, if I'm allowed to call it that? I don't know.
Well,
I don't even think it's a disorder.
Wildly confused by, right, Justin? Which is like, what is it exactly? Every time I try to get someone to pin down a definition for me, it's like, and it gets into it in this article. Quote, it's tricky because autism is not one thing, because it is different for every single person who has autism. There's a saying that if you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. Well, how is that a diagnosis then?
Right, yeah.
Wait,
like,
why are they grouping
all these symptoms together? That was always a mystery to me.
I thought the revealing thing about this article was that it showed us how to diagnose autism. If you carry a bunny around, apparently you're autistic. No?
That's right. Looking at you, George, from the cartoon Bugs Bunny.
Wow, that's a deep pull, but you know what? You read my mind. That's like where I was going next.
Oh my God, really?
That's really bad. That's really, really bad. No, I mean, isn't autism like a second-handed disease? And what I mean by that, it's like, he doesn't interact the way we all interact. He must be autistic. We're going to actually see this in the first Reddit on Reddit this week, where I can be accused of autism.
I mean,
I'm not saying, to be really clear to the folks out there who might be offended, I'm not saying that autism doesn't exist. I'm saying that I don't know what the fuck it is, and whenever I time I look for a definition, no one will tell me what it is. They just tell me it's a bunch of different things, which is not a thing.
Right.
It's the idea that, as far as I know, they have trouble with social interaction. It's similar to Asperger's in that way. Isn't Asperger's... Yes, I know I'm saying Asperger's, by the way. Isn't that where you can't pick up social cues?
They don't call it Asperger's anymore. They now say that people who they used to classify under Asperger's are now on the spectrum. They have autism spectrum disorder. That's what they, that's what they say now. But it's not clear what it is. It's just kind of like, okay, well, that's what he's got. Like, but just so you know, like from what I've seen of people who have it, and you can really tell when they, I guess it's just, there's this palpable like feeling where you can tell just by talking to someone that they have it, like, okay, yeah, you have that disorder, or, you know, again, I think it's a disorder because it's like, you can tell that like, even on their own, they're going to do things differently. They're not going to understand certain things. I don't even know what those are, though. All I can say is that there's a certain feeling you get when you're around someone like this, and it's consistent. You think, okay, he's one of those. And
see,
but the thing,
how
like,
fucking
yeah.
impressive is that? He's one of those. Let's just call him autistic.
Yeah, it's not very scientific, but I can tell you, it's like there is a reason all these random symptoms are grouped together. It's because there's this feeling you get when you're around someone like this, and that makes you kind of feel like, okay, like he's like that other guy I met earlier. Like he's like this group of people.
I'm not sure there's a feel to it. I'm not sure he's an autist, but he's autistic. I mean, isn't the greater...
I can say that again with an English accent.
I can't do an English accent. Don't make me do it. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. That's the closest I can do. Isn't the greater problem here that, like, we need to have autistic people represented on Sesame Street so they can identify with them as children?
Isn't it an oxymoron to say that the autistic kid who picks up no social cues is going to identify with a Muppet?
Yeah.
Autistic kids.
I don't know how that works.
Autistic kids develop depression because there was no one they could identify with on Sesame Street.
Yeah. I don't get how that works. And again, someone will say, well, it works this way for X number of people. I don't give a fuck.
It seems
contradictory.
This whole, Justin, isn't this whole identifying with thing kind of like almost a form of naturalism? Because you're not saying like, oh, I'm going to identify with the archetype of the overcoming hero, or the archetype of like, you know, kid trying to boy trying to get the girl. Like, I need to identify with someone who's exactly fucking like me and has the exact same mental disorders I do, or the same skin color, or you name it. Like, is that kind of naturalism applied to children's literature?
It's not kind of, it is 100% naturalism, and what it does is it completely undercuts the power of the story. And in the sense, you're right, it undercuts the power of the children's story here. I mean, if there's one place where you learn from a story, it's Sesame Street. And how can you learn from having someone demonstrate an ideal if you can't demonstrate that ideal? So now you're just going to see someone who acts exactly like you and be like, oh, all right, I'm just going to keep acting like the way I am, rather than, as you're saying, like, oh, look, there's a story about a guy getting a girl. What does he do that I don't do that I can learn from? Instead, you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep carrying my bunny around and not shaking birds' hands or wings or whatever the fuck.
And how granular do we have to get with this? I mean, do we now need a, you know, a multiracial spectrum of kids with autism, and one is in a wheelchair and, you know, one is transgender?
Like, I don't know why the Breech babies aren't represented on Sesame Street.
Yeah. You know who's not represented on Sesame Street in the Muppets is humans. We need more human Muppets. That's what we need.
Well, don't they have, like, the guy who's the newscaster, the adult?
No, I don't want actual humans. I want human Muppets.
No, the newscaster
You're
Muppet.
Not listening to me.
What about the old men who Muppet? Watch? There's the old men who watch TV and say, no, ho, 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 ho.
Statler and Waldorf are on Sesame Street now?
See, I'm not the only one who's confused about this.
It's like, I'm pretty sure Sesame Street and the Muppets are like a shared universe. It's like, you know, it's like Marvel and Spider-Man. Like, they're kind of like a side deal. You know?
I have no idea.
I'm just waiting for Bert to come out as transgender.
That's right. It'll be here soon. Yeah. I don't know. This whole thing. Let's move on to something even more weird, believe it or not. India.
I think that's this week's news stories, is they just get weirder and weirder.
Has become the second country in the world to give rivers human status.
Second?
Second. That's why this is my favorite story. A decades-long fight against river pollution in India has been given a much-needed boost. The fight has been given a boost? That's a horrible sentence. On Monday, a court in the Himalayan state of unpronounceable word declared that the Yamuna and Ganges rivers are living entities. The court justified its ruling on grounds that the rivers were, quote, losing their very existence, and the situation required, quote, extraordinary measures to be taken to preserve and conserve the rivers Ganga and Yamuna, which is an alternate name for Ganges, by the way. The ruling said the rivers, both of which are considered sacred to Hindus and are personified as goddesses, were crucial in providing physical and spiritual sustenance to locals. So basically now the humans have been granted rights and will have a guardian appointed by the government who will have legal ownership over taking care of the river. So, Justin, next up, mountains, trees, gorges.
My balls.
Have human rights, or...
I mean,
yeah,
if we're talking...
Where do you think this is going?
If we're talking about giving physical and spiritual sustenance to people, I think my balls qualify.
Oh my god.
I don't understand. Like, I get the environmentalist argument. Like, I get that, hey, the river needs to be protected. We're going to give it a guardian. I mean, we fucking adopt highways in America, right? Like, isn't the river just the equivalent of the Indian highway because, like, they have no infrastructure because they're so poor?
My God.
So I get, like, I get the adopt a river concept, but why do you have to call it a person? Like, I don't get it.
That way it has rights that the government has to protect. Isn't this the deep irony of actually naming a river a human and giving it rights? Is that this river has more rights than I do? At least people have to leave this river the fuck alone.
Wait, so can I finally marry a body of water?
Even better, I can't wait for intersectionality to take place here, and I can identify as a river.
Yeah.
And then I, for once, will have individual human rights.
Sesame Street needs to make a river Muppet.
we're
just a puddle with googly eyes.
Get the googly eyes. We're only now just tapping the comedic font that is intersectionality.
But I mean, I guess that this is why they had the trash heap Marjorie on Fraggle Rock. They were ahead of the curve there.
This giant pile of rubbish is a human.
Notice they made her a woman.
Sexist. This is the second country, by the way, to declare a river a human. The first was, unshockingly, New Zealand, who named the Whanganui River a human recently to settle some claims about ownership. And the river is also now has its own legal guardians and is its own entity. But seriously, this could be an incredibly effective / horrifying environmentalist tactic where we declare that this river gives spiritual sustenance or this forest is a god and therefore has human status. But two, these rivers and maybe soon mountains and trees and rocks have more rights than I do. The river doesn't have to pay taxes. It doesn't have to obey stupid government laws. It has to be left alone legally. I mean, what the fuck?
I think Daniel, that you really should come out as trans river. We need to transubstantiate you into a river.
You know, I really identify more as a delta.
I'm a united.
You took a stupid joke and somehow found a way to make it dumber.
Way dumber.
That's what I do.
Congratulations. Wow. Couldn't go with tributary or swamp.
You know who's a tributary? It's okay. Katniss. She volunteers as tributary.
Oh my god. It's not even a pun when, like, the common root word is obvious. Does it even count as a pun if everyone knows, like, tributary means tribute? Like...
Come on, how confusing.
You couldn't identify as a crick? Nothing? Okay.
How confusing would that have been if when Katniss volunteered, she was like, I volunteer as tributary. Everyone just looked at her like, what the fuck?
That would be if you just replaced all the characters with rivers. They were all just rivers.
And you know what? That movie would actually get better.
And they were all just mumbling to themselves and they like crawled out of their little ice box.
So you want to make everyone in the Hunger Games autistic. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
We have gone extraordinarily esoteric right now. I want to bring the show back somewhat into the realm of farce and less from the realm of Salvador Dali.
To be fair, I think the news has gone to Salvador Dali this week. Like, when I look at this outline, all I see is, like, elongated clocks.
That's right. Make sure that L sticks in there, otherwise. Okay. So speaking
I see that in the
government
mirror.
Granting... Yeah. Is it one of those funhouse mirrors?
Maybe.
Speaking of the government granting things that make no sense whatsoever, a judge in Oregon has granted a resident the right to be genderless. Patch, his name is Patch, and he has no last name because he also was given the right to use only a first name and no surname. Patch is a 27-year-old game designer and likely the first legally agender person in the United States. The Multnomah County Court granted Patch a, quote, general judgment of name and sex change on March 10th. In the same judgment, Patch also lost his last name. Agender is identified as the absence of gender, not to be confused with transgender or genderqueer. Agender people typically describe feeling that they have no gender identity whatsoever. Blah, 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 blah. Quote, as a kid, probably starting around age 6, gender didn't make sense to me. End quote. That's because you're a fucking 6-year-old.
Took my joke.
Yeah. As a kid, probably starting around 6, astrophysics didn't make any sense to me. Therefore, it doesn't exist.
As around 6, women stopped making sense to me, so I identified as asexual.
There you go. Quote, I was told men were this, women were this. As a teen, I learned about transgender people. That didn't seem like what I was. And then I learned about genderqueer, and that didn't seem like what I was. End quote. It seems like you're just a fucking nonconformist. You have a gender. Get over it. Moving on with your life. Justin?
I mean, this is an example of somebody who has some sort of deeply rooted psychological issue. And this is where I'm going to take a lot of heat for this. Because You know, even Adam Carolla conceded the other day on his show that there are people who are legitimately born as the gender they don't identify as, which I thought was an interesting stance from Adam Carolla. But I think there are a lot of this is people who have issues and they're just not addressing it. And this guy has some sort of issues where he doesn't feel like he belongs or is normal. And this is how it's manifesting. But I mean, there's a number of issues with this beyond that. There's also the idea of why do you need government to recognize your gender status? Like with this whole bathroom thing where we need to put up signs that have a white triangle on it to know it's an all-gender bathroom. And you write all-gender bathroom. Can't you just call it bathroom and anyone can use it? And then it's an all-gender, all-race, all-religion, all-height bathroom? Like, like, why do you need to, like...
Not all-height.
Why do you need to start putting signs on the bathroom? Like, you know, this is a... this is a micro penis bathroom. Micro penises are accepted here. Like, why do you need government to acknowledge you exist in order to use something or to live? So the fact that he needed to be granted the status, that's an even more disturbing trend as well. And also, the worst part about this, the biggest problem is, it seems like he's just setting himself up intentionally to be an Abbott and Costello sketch for the rest of his life. What are you? I'm a gender. Yes, what gender are you? No, I'm agender.
Wow. I like it. Nice there. The point about the government thing is interesting. Like, we decide that once the government has given it legitimacy, it is a thing.
Yeah.
But, like, that's not how reality works. Government doesn't have to declare that, you know, the laws of aerodynamics function and then an airplane flies.
Right.
That's not how the world works.
But now this guy.
Only if we believe it hard enough, Daniel.
That's right.
It's all the government is Tinkerbell, right? Just believe hard enough and you'll become agender. But no, this guy, if he went up to somebody before and he's like, I'm agender, he would feel bad because people would be like, you're a fucking idiot, dude. But now he can go, oh no, look, I'm a legitimate. The government declared me agender. And it gives him some sort of like, Trump card.
Yeah. You know, in the long time that I listened to Loveline, the old Loveline with Adam and Dr. Drew, this kind of call came up a few times where someone didn't feel any identity with a gender. They didn't really phrase it that way back then because they didn't have that kind of vernacular. But, you know, I don't feel like a man or a woman. I don't feel like I'm attracted to people. I don't feel like having sex, whatever. And in all three of the cases I remember, each time the person had low testosterone, they were all three men. And when they got testosterone supplements, everything was back to quote unquote normal.
Or you could just go to the fucking gym and raise your testosterone level. I mean, that's what I'm saying, that there are greater issues here. I mean, yeah.
No, I mean, some people have a medical condition where their body doesn't produce enough testosterone.
Oh, 100%. That's what I was just going to say. I recognize that there are people who have medical issues. But we're also in a society that guts masculinity by making it so that the activities that give you testosterone are considered toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that, men are just, look, do you think guys who sit around all day, and I'm going to piss off a lot of our audience or piss off a lot of people who hear this, guys who sit around all day and just play video games, do you think that helps your testosterone?
Well, no, it medically doesn't. In fact, it would probably raise your estrogen level.
Right. So you look at these guys, right, the stereotypical nerdy virgins in high school, and they're sitting around playing video games. All you're doing is perpetuating your problem. And then you give it a name, and you say, I'm agender, and that's legitimate. That's when it becomes even worse. This is the problem with the social justice crap, right? It makes it so ultimately any problem you have, you're excusing by giving it a name and saying it's a legitimate lifestyle.
Yeah. Like imagine if people with like cystic fibrosis, they don't admit like I have this debilitating disease that should be cured at all cost. Cystic fibrosis makes you die really early in life, by the way. Like we don't say that. We say like, "Oh, I'm just like, you know, I'm just a half-life person. Like I just have half of a life. Like that's just the way I identify as a half-life person." Like, you're moving these biological facts into the realm of just subjectivity, where it's just like, oh no, that's just like the way I am. Like, it's not that I have low testosterone. I just don't identify as a gender.
Right. Like, I don't have scoliosis. My spine is just differently shaped.
I got an even worse one. Ready? I don't have a disease. I just have an immune system deficiency.
Or not even, like, they wouldn't even say deficiency, right, Justin? They would just say my immune system doesn't identify as healthy.
Yeah, or it's different. Or I have a differently abled immune system.
I have my immune system identifies as a pacifist and therefore won't kill invaders.
That's right. So now getting to the story we've all been waiting for, mostly because of the picture, not going to lie.
The picture is Cosmopolitan.
Yeah. Cosmopolitan, which made some news last week when it wrote an article excoriating originalism, but didn't actually know what it was, brings us this week the story, Why Guys Get Turned On When You Orgasm, all good so far, dash, and Why That's a Bad Thing. Yes. Okay. This story is so much fun. Are you ready? It's not enough that men are already having more orgasms than women. By the way, it's not enough. Like, that's a horrifying thing. First of all, that's just, you know. Anyway.
Goddamn biology.
We can do the entire episode on that sentence.
Goddamn biology.
I think. To make matters worse, a new study published.
Just because I am orgasm inclined doesn't mean that I should be looked down upon. I am differently abled with my orgasms that I can come very quickly. Okay?
That's right. Indeed. To make matters worse, so we know where this is going, a new study published in the Journal of Sex Research found...
Butt sex?
Aside from deriving from their own deriving pleasure from their own orgasms, obviously, men also derive a specific sort of masculine pleasure from making female partners orgasm.
The researchers in this study...
referred to the incredibly predictable phenomenon as a, quote, masculinity achievement, unquote. And then the author makes this weird aside that she's like, I'm not exactly sure what that means, obviously, because you're fucking writer at Cosmo. But I imagine a masculinity achievement looks something like Super Mario punching a coin out of one of those floating boxes in the video game. Timely reference, Heather.
I know that when I'm at the gym and I set a new personal record for what I'm lifting, I jump up and hit a coin box out of the sky. And I go, doing! And everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing right now, dude? Well, they're like, we let you wear your superhero shirts at the gym. Like, don't fucking act like Super Mario, man.
I personally, whenever I gain some new item, I just hold it over my head and go da na na na. Or whenever I win an argument, I like, you know, jump in the air and pump my fist in the air and sing da 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 da.
Whenever I eat something, I grow 10 sizes.
Broop, broop, broop.
Especially blue pills.
Yeah. That's right. Here's where it just goes. I don't know. Off the rails would be polite.
Yeah, how does it get worse? That's not possible here.
Quote, despite increasing focus on women's orgasms, despite that, research indicated that the increased attention to women's orgasms may also serve men's sexuality, complicating conceptualizations of women's orgasms as women-centric. What the fuck, Justin?
You're asking
me what
I think.
It's not good enough that we are increasingly focusing on women's orgasm. It is not good enough that we as men want to give more pleasure to the women in our lives. We have to, according to the logic here, not like doing it. We have to want to increase the frequency of our women's orgasms, but we can't take any pleasure from actually achieving that act in order for it to count. Those, all those other orgasms, they just don't count because they add to masculinity achievement, whatever the fuck that means. What ridiculous nonsense logic is this?
Are you asking me as if I somehow can explain this?
I'm asking you because you're the host of the show and you're supposed to have first response. Okay.
Well, my point is I can't respond to this. I'm really glad that James stopped laughing. Like, I think the seriousness of it hit James because he was laughing hysterically and he's like, wait, I'm not going to laugh at this anymore. Because what this really is this is almost a dystopian story where the men are simply used for breeding or for pleasure. It's like, you're an animal. We have you chained up. You come in. You help us as a tool to achieve orgasm, and then you leave, and you cannot experience any pleasure in it yourself. I mean, in this light, in this perspective that this woman is writing from, what's the difference between a man and a dildo?
The dildo doesn't mow the lawn.
That wasn't a setup for a joke, but that's a good punchline. My point is Well, she doesn't mow the lawn in this scenario either, because she doesn't need to. Yeah, I mean, this just completely undermines everything that makes sexuality worthwhile. I mean, it's almost to the point that is even worth continuing to talk about. This is so obviously ridiculous. I mean, this is one of those, last week when we had William on, he talked about how this kind of stuff ultimately undermines the woman's pleasure and enjoyment of a relationship. This view of a man as simply a beast that only wants to fuck everything. And that ends up hurting women. And this is another example of that. This is them seeing men as a beast. And then this is what they end up with. And then this takes away their own enjoyment. Because maybe I'm under a faulty assumption, but don't women enjoy helping men orgasm?
How dare you?
Or do they not? They hate it.
The male phallus is the worst thing on the planet, if you believe feminism. And they put up with it only for the sake of continuing the species. The moment they can figure out how to fucking grow a baby out of their armpit, they're going to do that and we'll be making slaves. I think it's important to discuss this for one additional reason, and I want to read this quote, and then I want to scream. So be prepared. In a separate statement from the authors, they explained why it's a bad thing for men to gain masculinity points for bringing female partners to orgasm. Quote, "One reason is that it might pressure some heterosexual men to feel like they have to give women orgasms, as if orgasm is something men pulled out of a hat and presented to women. This ties into cultural ideas of women as passive recipients of whatever men give them."
Oh my God.
The twisting of logic, words, concepts, everything, basic reasoning skills in those two sentences is too much to unpack in a 2-hour show. But why I wanted to read that quote and why I think it's important to talk about this article in particular is because this is altruism in the bedroom. This is nothing short of, if you gain any pleasure from it, it must be wrong. You must do all actions self-sacrificially. You must not in any way derive pleasure from it. This is, for lack of a better term, a kick right to the cunt for women.
God. I see what you did there.
Thank you.
That's funny because on my outline, I actually wrote down that quote, the cultural idea that women are passive recipients of what men give them. And then I just wrote the letters, ah, after that. So I literally, like, you said it made you want to scream. And that was literally what I wrote in my outline.
Yes.
But what goes even deeper than that, or I don't know if it's deep. No, it's not deeper than that. But, like, just kind of on a different note here is that, like, they're saying that, you know, women are the passive recipients of what men give them. Like, in certain versions of sex, in certain styles of sex, yes, the woman is the passive recipient of what men give them. That's what they like. Like, you know, like that's the biological nature of committing the act in certain ways. There's other ways that are not that, and those are good too.
Pegging.
There you go. Or, you know, just, you know, there's other things, but it's just like one way that a lot of women really like is to just be totally the passive recipient of the man's strength and, you know, vitality and vigor and like, and they're just attacking that entire way of doing sex, which is insane. Let's just like – it's just – and the reason is because what feminism does is it tries to – it tries to establish this radical egalitarianism, not where women have equal rights, which of course is logical, but where women are just seen as metaphysically equivalent in every way to men. And so anything that puts them in a different category, you know, where they're the receiver and the man is the giver, that is sexist. So it ruins the entire dynamic because the dynamic depends upon any, like, there being different roles. So it's this way to use equality to attack the good is the way I see it.
I thought of
everybody. Wait, yeah. A man is the giver. So you're telling me that book's porn?
Oh my God, Justin.
Just stop it. I thought of a terribly stupid analogy that made me laugh in my head. Thus, I'm going to share it, even though it's retarded. Which is like, imagine walking into a bakery and going up to the counter and saying, I'm going to sell you a cake. And being like, wait, what? This is a bakery. We sell you cakes. It's like, not in my feminist world. I sell you cakes.
That implies I'm just the passive recipient of what I purchase. Like, and I don't have a part in the process of the cake making. They're like, yeah, you don't. I fucking made the cake. You buy it. Like,
I sell the cake. Well, I mean, you buy and eat the cake. No. Have you met Gloria Steinem? That is not the world we live in anymore. Fuck you, baker.
I mean, it's ridiculous that you're even using the metaphor because you're referring to an experience as a product. Like, orgasms, like, can I just go up to women and be like, here, I want to give you this. And I give them, like, a thing, and they're like, what is this? Yeah. It's like, it's an orgasm.
It's just a little slip of paper with the word written on it.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, as I was saying, to unpack the insanity, the misdirection, the misuse of concepts, the complete destruction of language that are those two sentences that I read would take us days. But we could focus an hour just on the word give. You know, pressure on some heterosexual men to feel like they have to give women orgasms and like they can hand it to them. Do you know what the fucking word equivocation means? They're different concepts of giving someone something. We're not literally taking the orgasm out of our pocket and shoving it in their vagina. Okay, giving it to them means like we've engaged in a relationship and we have this reciprocal thing that we do with each other and we want to spiritually give them something, or in this case, physically pleasure them with something. Doesn't mean we have an actual object that we're giving them. The fucking retarded use of language.
Why do you rely on that object?
I've been doing this wrong my entire life. You mean orgasm isn't code for the decoder ring I give them?
No. No, that's just a thing all its own. That is a kink all its own. Oh my God.
Like wearing chokers, yeah.
So Daniel, why is it that I understand that obviously that's like, yeah, very weird use of language that they're referring to this as like, you know, the giving of, but why do you find that relevant exactly? Why do you think they chose to use that ambiguous terminology here?
I mean, it's basically what you referred to already, James. It's that they're trying to completely destroy any differences whatsoever between the sexes, especially in sexuality. They use it here because it is when you give someone something like out of your pocket, it's a physical act that can be seen as aggressive, I guess. I think that's the tie here, is that it's some sort of physical aggression to give women orgasms. Whereas we're talking about it more in a metaphorical sense here, but
right, they're trying to make, it's the whole thing of, as I said, trying to make masculinity toxic, trying to make masculinity evil. The idea that men just want to fuck anything indiscriminately, it's the same thing, undermining the value of masculinity. And the value of masculinity is the, I'm trying to say this delicately without coming across like a jackass, although I suppose that's a little too late if you're listening to more than one episode or 5 minutes of this podcast. But, you know, he is the one that is being the aggressor in the act, right? Isn't this what Nathaniel Brandon wrote about in The Psychology of Self-Esteem? That's necessarily the psychology of the event. So if that's the psychology of it and you make that's evil, well, you've backed men into a corner and you've made it so there's no way that they can't be evil.
But even, yes.
You necessary.
All of that. And.
Okay.
The second sentence.
You're going to butt me. It's yes and, douchebag.
I didn't say butt. I said all of that and. The second sentence here.
You caught yourself.
The ties into cultural ideas of women as passive recipients of whatever men give them, which is using the false equivocation of give. And then also, while I do respect James's point earlier, there's another element here where passive recipients is wrong, which is we're talking about an act where people at least find each other attractive, probably are in love, something to that effect, where they have consented to this action. It's not as if a man just walks up to a woman and gives her an orgasm and she's a fucking stranger. I mean, sometimes. But the idea here being that she's not a passive recipient of whatever men give her. She has, in fact, explicitly said, it is okay for you to have sex with me. And thus, you would think that there it implies some expectation of orgasm, or at least would some wanting of an orgasm.
Well, and even more concretely than that, don't guys get mad when they talk about, like, oh, you know, she was really hot, but all she did was lay there? Like, being on the receiving end doesn't mean you have to be 100% passive where you just lay there. I mean, if somebody just laid there, you know what I would honestly do? I'd be like, all right, I'm leaving. Like, this is ridiculous. You're not into this. Like, no, I would. I would stop. I would be like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to waste my time anymore. Guys say they keep going, and they're like, yeah, she just laid there. It didn't matter how hot she was. So that's it's the passive thing doesn't make any sense either. Based upon, I mean, there is the psychology of it with the giving and the receiving in that sense. But that doesn't mean you just have to fucking lay there and take it.
Right, but there is a kind of – inequality is the wrong word. But there's a kind of – there is a difference. Like physically the woman takes a less active role. I don't – yeah, passive is the wrong word because it goes way too far. But there's definitely like in a physical sense the woman takes less of an active role. And what they do is they try to like imply that because – we're having these roles during the sex act that's supposed to carry over to everything else where women are just, you know, seen as passive in general. You know, they're saying that that implies that. No, it doesn't. The woman can be completely, you know, active and everything, you know, in the rest of their life. But in this particular way of doing sex, which is kind of like, I don't know, I at least think of it as quote unquote the normal way of doing it. Like
in the butt. Butt sex?
That's the normal way, yeah. Then there's the if you want to have kids way, which is the secondary way.
But, I just want to point out that there are so many similarities between the way in which we will never be able to do anything publicly and the way that Milo was fucking shamed over his podcast. If anyone listened to this, is what I'm trying to say, we are boned. I just want to point that out.
Oh, I know.
Okay. So don't share this episode with anyone, listeners. That's really what we're trying to say. Is keep this one for yourselves. Yeah.
Patreon only.
That's
the people who want to pay. If you're going to fuck us over, at least pay money for it.
At least pay us. If you're going to fuck us, at least pay us.
Yeah, if you're going to fuck us, at least pay us. If you're going to give us pleasure, at least pay us.
That's right.
I mean, prostitution, but that's a whole other thing. No, James, I agree with what you're saying. Like, I get what you're saying. I get what you're coming from the physical aspect. And I think maybe this is a good place to leave this story. And Daniel, you can decide once you hear my brilliance, if this is a good note to leave it on. This is what I always say about men and women and the role and the relationship of men and women. The danger that men present to women is physical. And the danger that women present to men is psychological. And I think that that is translated to the act of sex. And when you say a woman is passive, maybe she's a bit not as active physically, but I do think there is a role to play psychologically in sex for her in the same way that, you know, the man is aggressive physically. So it's not a surprise that the thing that the greatest threat to the opposite gender is also the greatest strength and what's most attractive. And that's what makes relationships so crazy and scary and everything.
That is a weird note to end on, but we shall end there because I'm tired of talking about this story.
No, that's a good point. You don't think that's a good point? Fuck you.
I didn't say it wasn't a good point. I said it was a weird point to end on for this article.
No, it's not. It's the best point to end on.
Greatest point.
I mean,
great in my life. Believe me.
There you go.
The best points.
Always go for the Donald Trump impersonation.
I've met so many points, and this one's the best.
We will continue talking about things that maybe James thinks he hasn't seen anything as great in his life. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. For weeks, James has been bugging me to review a show, but I've been seeing movie after movie. But it was revealed this week that they made the Yellow Power Ranger gay, and she's being played by the hottest girl in the movie, so I was like, you know what? I'm not going to see this movie. So instead, we are going to review the show Billions. I will let James and Daniel talk about it in a second, but first I will give my brief thoughts on the show. So I finally watched the first two episodes because plenty of people had told me to watch it, and James wanted to review it so badly. And I can understand why people like this show. There's intellectual depth to it. There's shades of gray. You know, who's the bad guy? Is it the government official, or is it the investment guy, the guy who leads the investment company? And it's pretty, I would say, realistic in that sense. Not naturalistic, but the way they portray these people's psychologies and the ideas that motivate them, both good and bad, is pretty realistic. So I get it. I get the appeal of the show. However, I have noted before, and I will continue to note, that there is a problem in our society as far as visual art goes. And it's that we forget the fact that it's visual. Billions, and this is likely caused by its budget, is one of these shows that's just people talking to each other. If you want to watch that, good for you. I have no desire to watch a show that's just different setups of two shots and one shots and wide shots of people talking to each other. I need some sort of visual aspect to my show. That said, gentlemen, James, the floor is yours.
So, yeah, I mean, I get it, especially because, like, if people aren't shooting at each other in a show, I have a hard time paying attention. But this show, this standing in rooms and talking, this is really, I've loved this show. Like, for a while, I kind of wasn't sure why it was called Billions. And after about five episodes, I realized it gets its name because that's the number of times I come during any one episode.
Not where I thought this was going.
No, I mean, I have a different evaluation, actually, Justin, is I find that somehow, I think kind of on accident, Bobby Axelrod, the owner of the hedge fund, is pretty much morally white. And Chuck Rhodes, the SEC agent who's always trying to tear down Bobby for his wealth and his brilliance and his achievement, like, is pretty much morally black, although morally black in an interesting way. Like, Chuck Rhodes is a very interesting villain. He, you know, you really understand his psychology. He has kind of a backstory, which kind of reminds me of Ellsworth Toohey. As a kid spraying that kid with the hose. They really get into the backstories of the characters and have a deep appreciation for how psychology affects people. Bobby Axelrod is always talking to the company therapist, who's almost more like a coach slash she's almost more like a life coach, and they get really deep into his motives for doing things, and he's always questioning what he does. And I think the idea of the show is that he's supposed to be morally gray because on one hand he's intelligent and really concerned with doing the right thing, but on the other hand, he's a greedy capitalist. So for me, that just comes out to him being morally white. He has certain suspect motives on the edges, but no motives that I wouldn't have myself. So this is my favorite show right now by far. That's my review.
I don't have an extensive review of the show. I think it's really well done. The bad guy is played by Justin, what is his name?
Paul Giamatti.
Thank you. was going to say Peter Capaldi, but not at all the same person.
No.
Paul Giamatti. And I think he does a tremendous job playing the government bureaucrat and the horrible psychology that is that human being. And I think the main character, while I'm not as convinced by James' argument that he's 100% moral, comes off as overall a very good character, i.e. morally good character. And that's why I enjoy it. I do get a little tired of the talking. So much talking. More talking than fucking Mad Men, which I thought was the most talking ever on television.
See?
And
no, Mad Men at least played subtlety to, visual subtlety to the surroundings and the settings and the way the items they had and the lives they lived reflected and impacted their psychologies.
Yeah, there was that. It was also 100 times slower. But
yeah, I agree. Yes. But like the set dressing actually fucking mattered. Like Billions is just like, put some people in suits in offices and then like they talk to each other.
There is that. So I can't watch a lot of the show for long stretches of time. I have to sort of parse it out, which is why I'm still in the first season. But I do enjoy it. I think it's really well written. And I think the delving into the psychology of these characters is beautifully done. So sort of a mixed review for this show overall, but there are many things to like about it.
Yeah, although I do want to push back a little bit on the point you said about well-written, I understand what you're saying, but there's an interesting discussion here, and I don't have the answer to it, but there's an interesting discussion of how much is the visual nature of a show the responsibility of the director, and how much of it is the writer giving the director visual cues in the script. You're not supposed to direct for the director when you're writing a script, but also, isn't it your responsibility to include things that are visual in nature in the script? So the question is, where's that line? Where does that responsibility lie?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's basically a visual novel.
Right.
And I'm okay with that, so, once you acknowledge that that's what it is.
I'm okay with there being not many visuals because I'm just focused in on the acting and the characters. Wendy Rhodes, who's the psychologist, whenever she's lied to, I never liked this actress very much because she was in Sons of Anarchy and I hated everyone in that show. But it turns out this actress is great because whenever her character is lied to, she just has it down. The character who's the psychologist, she can tell when she's being lied to. She doesn't know exactly what's going on, but you can just see the gears turning in her head, putting pieces together when she's being lied to by people she's trying to get to confide to her. And she's just, and there's, you know, and it always relates to the plot. Like her husband lies to her and she's like, okay, like he just told a lie. I'm not sure what that was about, but that was a lie. And you could see that whole thought process play out across her face. So I don't know if that counts for the visual, but I'm plenty excited by the twists and turns of this plot. And, you know, I don't find it lacking in any way.
It does count 100% towards the visual, and that is 100% the counter argument against what I've said. But that points to the weakness in the directing and the lack of creativity in the directing, where if that's the visual nature of your show, you need to figure out a way stylistically to emphasize that.
Yeah.
I'm almost glad they don't emphasize it because it's so subtle, because it's almost I don't know if this is it's just that's the way it happens in real life, is that there's these very subtle cues, and I'm glad they don't make them obvious because you really have to be paying attention. And you see that, and I'm like, and I'm looking really closely, I'm like, oh my God, she knows she's being lied to. Like, if you follow all the minutiae of the plot, it really pays dividends.
Dividends.
Yeah.
Pays dividends.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right.
I have a quick shout out before we move on, actually.
Okay. Yeah, this is the surprise that you won't tell us what it is.
Right.
And it's going to be like porn.
Yes. I have a quick shout out for porn. Nothing specific, just all of it on the internet. What the fuck, Justin? It's like last week and you were like, you don't identify a James Taggart? It's like the worst possible example. No, I was surprised by something and I wanted to give it a shout out, which is that Faiza sat down. I was putting together a cabinet. And Faiza sat down to not help put together the cabinet. We have a great relationship. And she put on Netflix and put on Dave Chappelle's new special. And my first thought was, oh, fuck. Not only do I have to put together a cabinet, I have to listen to Dave Chappelle while I'm doing it. Fuck me. But shockingly good. Shockingly good. He is so funny in this special, and it's partially because he's so meta about being Dave Chappelle. And additionally, he is brilliantly not politically correct and fucking takes to task all the people who get upset over bullshit nuanced stuff like transgender issues and black versus white and whatever. And he just rips them to shred throughout the entire thing in a great stand-up bit. So I highly recommend it. It's so different from other stuff I've seen Dave Chappelle do.
This special is being attacked for being anti-trans, isn't it?
It wouldn't surprise me. I didn't know that, but there's a whole section, like literally 20 minutes, where he does trans jokes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's being attacked for that, so...
Yeah, early on he makes some off-color joke, and he's like... He says something to the effect of, like, if you can't handle that, you bitches better leave now, because we're about off to get a color. Lot worse. So, I highly recommend it, Justin. I know you're maybe skeptical of Dave Chappelle, as was I, but it is quite yes. good.
I'll watch it at work this week. I mean, I can't get in more trouble watching that than if someone had found me watching Jim Norton's new special.
No.
All right.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
I included this one for you, James. This is Death Note. It's a Netflix adaptation of an anime. And in the trailer, it looks like a young man gets a notebook that when he writes someone's name in it, they are killed somehow. So it looks like some weird version of the List of Jericho in WWE. Wherever he gets mad at someone, he just goes, "You just made the list." Except this guy actually like kills people, I guess. Cause like at the end of it, it looks like a demon shows up in his room and is like, "I'm going to rape you." But I think the demon is actually, going to help him kill people. That was the read I got on it. Cause I'm assuming there's not a Netflix original movie about child rape, just assuming. Maybe this is a Jared Fogle who shows up in his room at the end.
Did have the crazy eyes.
Where's my sub, bitch? I got a foot long for you.
Oh my god.
Black Forest Ham.
So I'm really excited about this because I've been a fan of Death Note since I was in high school. The only problem I see here is that the anime and the manga are kind of – it's a thriller, but it consists of people talking in rooms mostly. But the thing is in the anime and in the manga, there's a lot of visual stylization to that. Like it's characters talking to each other and they're lying – a lot of lying and like – like it's a sort of this intellectual game of cat and mouse. And whenever the character thinks to themselves like, "Oh, he thinks that I did X, but really I'm doing Y." And they kind of like, they're thinking to themselves about the plot. It goes into this like kind of stylized universe where like the characters have like different coloration. And so they make it visually very interesting in the anime. They're not going to do that in this. And it looks like they're kind of making this movie's going to be much more like sort of physical. They're going to have physical chases where like looks like there's some kind of like Ferris wheel that like collapses or something. I don't know what I think about that. That goes kind of against what this show is about, but I can see why they have to do that because they're bringing it into a live action medium. So I'm excited. We'll see what happens.
Hug.
So they're making it more visual in nature.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like they heard my response. Thank you, Netflix. I'm still going to tackle this.
Tackle.
Really?
Yeah, I have no interest.
Yeah.
Tackle.
Meh. I think this is something my wife is going to watch. She's kind of an anime fan as well. I don't know if she's ever seen Death Note, but yeah.
So, James, you can review this for us later.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely do that. One red flag is that my favorite character does not show up in the trailer.
It's a one-minute teaser. You're going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, my favorite character is arguably, like, I mean, like, he's the second most important character in the show, so he better be in it.
Yeah. We're going to see this in the last trailer that we discussed, that an important character doesn't show up, so I promise you, you're going to be okay.
second trailer.
Daniel, I included this one for you. It's an animated movie. It's called Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. And it's starring Kevin Hart, Thomas Middleditch, and Ed Helms. And it's about two kids. I think maybe they're in high school or middle school. I can't tell their age. I think it's middle school. They invent a superhero called Captain Underpants. He looks like a giant baby who wears a cape. And then somehow they hypnotize their principal into thinking he's actually Captain Underpants.
Yeah, I think that summarizes that trailer.
Yeah, what do you think of it?
The animation looks cool, although it looks a little bit like, do you remember the Charlie Brown animated movie we recently had? It looks a little bit like that, but cleaner, a little more interesting. The writing seemed fine. It took a long time for them to set up the Captain Underpants thing, and that worries me a bit. You need
in the trailer,
75% of the trailer to set up the main premise of the film. That's a little bit of a worrisome kind of thing. It was funny. The beginning voice acting thing with Kevin Hart and Ed Helms was borderline idiotic, so that doesn't bode well. But I don't know. Maybe I'll catch it on Netflix. Soft, tentative hug.
Hug?
I am tackling this.
Tackle.
And I also noticed something we talked about, I think it was last week, where the only actor who was actually voice acting was Thomas Middleditch. Kevin Hart and Ed Helms were just using their voices.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. James, do you have an opinion on this?
I don't. I don't have any real connection to Captain Underpants. So, you know, I'm not against it, but it's just, you know, I got a lot of other things to see, so probably won't see this.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Oh my god, this is why we did Trailer Takedown this week. This is what Trailer Takedown is always waiting for. The Justice League trailer. Oh my god. Do I need to say anything else? I mean, Midsider Michael got the brunt of my initial reaction because we had been texting the week about the posters and everything and how the posters are shitty Photoshop hack jobs. I hate the posters so much. And the fact that they set them up individually and they show, you know, they released each like, oh, first it was Batman, then it was Wonder Woman, then it was blah, blah, blah. Aquaman, I think Aquaman was second, but that just drew attention to the fact that they just shot all the characters individually and then Photoshopped them into one poster together. And the poster looks awful. So I was like really sort of worried about this trailer for many reasons, but as I posted on Facebook, if you follow me on Facebook or you're my friend on Facebook, I said I wasn't going to cry. I promised myself I wasn't going to cry. And then in the middle of the trailer, Wonder Woman says, they said the Age of Heroes would never return. And Batman replies, it has to. And I was like, oh my God, Snyder, you somehow get writers to write exactly the movies that need to be made in our culture. And it's like your movie is a direct response. Like, it was like Batman versus Superman was a direct response to the critiques of Man of Steel. And now it's like Justice League is a direct response to the critiques of Batman versus Superman. Like, this is like, it's almost he's shoving romanticism and shoving heroism into our faces. It's unbelievable.
It was quite good. I didn't expect it to be bad, though, like you. I thought it would be good, but it was...
I didn't expect it to be bad. I was worried it was going to be modulated Snyder.
It pretty much met all my Snyder expectations, including, it must be noted, that the use of pop music was once again stunningly good.
Right, and everyone's saying, I hope they don't use pop music in trailers anymore. I mean, we discussed it when we talked about that. What was the one with the plane falling?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so we talked about that too. Right, but the use of the music and the come together music, where it starts with, they literally emphasize the line, if there's one thing, you've got to be free. Like, that's what it starts with. And then they cut just before Come Together Over Me, because they're giving you the subliminal message of the Over Me is Superman coming back to life, and they're reuniting because of what Superman taught them in Batman versus Superman, or they're uniting because of what Superman taught them in Batman versus Superman. Like, that's all in there in the use of that song.
Yeah. It's the thing where anything can be a cliche unless you execute it fucking brilliantly. And then it's good. And then that's what we want. And Snyder is fantastic with that. So, hug.
Hug!
Yeah, I mean, that goes unstated. Like, I'm just going to play the hug thing like 80 times in a row right now.
Hug! 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 Hug!
James, did you have any additional?
And yeah, and give we're going to dedicate at least 20 of those hugs to me because, yeah, I'm very impressed with this. Like, this looks really badass. I want to see Wonder Woman. This trailer, the action in it appealed to me in the same way the action in the Wonder Woman trailer came off. Like, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Aquaman, not so much Torso Man, but, you know, everything else. I really want to see this movie. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, and I've seen some comments where people are saying stylistically it looks similar to Sucker Punch. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I want more of that, please. Right now. Ever. Yes, always. Zack Snyder. We want to hear what you think about this trailer, so leave us some comments. Give us some tweets. Send us some snap. I want to know what you think of this trailer, what your response to it is. Do you think it's better than the Batman vs. Superman trailer? Is it worse? Does it make you more excited or less excited for this? Let us know. I want to know what the fans think of this now that they've been inundated into hailing Snydra. Now, let's talk about some people who don't know what they're talking about and probably hate Snyder. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it.
So the first Reddit here is actually not a Reddit at all.
What? This is... How dare you?
I'm using Reddit as a sort of concept more than an actual concrete. It's like it represents stupid shit on the internet that people say. Ignorant shit who think they're smart.
Clearly.
So the first is from the Meninist Twitter account, actually. And the tweet says, she rejected him and then got triggered when he felt the same way. And then it's the curious face emoji where you have the hand under the chin, which I use a lot when people confuse me. I just use that rather than being a dick and sending a question mark. And people I find actually, they don't respond to question marks. They respond to that emoji. So I don't know what it is about emojis. But I want to read the text message chain that this is referring to.
You want
to
do some text message theater?
Okay, are you saying you want to be the girl?
Pick one. I'll be either.
I'll be the guy.
Okay, you would.
Okay. Make sure to read out the emojis in full description for the deaf or for the blind.
Yeah.
This podcast is ADA compliant.
Yes, thank you. I was going to say that too. All right, so I will start. The guy has the first text message, and he sends it at 12:13 p.m.
Do we have to read the times? Who cares? Let's just read this.
I'm saying the time because it gives context as to why he's texting her at 12:13, okay? All right. Hey, I just wanted to say it was really great meeting you last night. Hope you're having a great day. Editorial aside, the fact that it says last night is why I was pointing the fact that it's 12:13 p.m., Daniel. Okay?
I don't think all right. That matters at all. Okay, moving on.
I do.
It doesn't change this at all. Okay, here we go. Hey, you too. You seem like a great guy. Listen, ... I really don't see you as a romantic partner, but I hope we can be friends. And then there's some time. I hope I didn't get your hopes up.
No, not at all. I felt the same way, so I'm really glad you said that.
Excuse me? WTF?
Huh?
Why do you feel that way?
I'm confused. Didn't you literally just say you don't see dating happening between us?
Seriously? I know rejection stings, but you don't have to get salty and attempt to throw it back in my face. Wow. ... Lol. I feel sorry for you. I really do. If you didn't think there was anything there, why the fuck did you text me today?
Because it's the polite and appropriate thing to do after having coffee with someone?
Wow. ... You really are pathetic. Someone who looks like you thinks he can be that picky? Laughing my ass off. That is really rich. By the way, the amount of hair you've lost at 30 makes you look 40, and you walk like an old man. Just your rejection like a man, and quit being a little bitch.
I think she means take.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Baldness is genetic. Outside of laying 10K for FUE, there's not a whole lot I can do for it. Also, I told you that I twisted my ankle carrying a patient down the stairs. You were about 100 pounds heavier than your photo implied. Something you can change. And up until now, I said nothing about it. FYI, the deal breaker for me was the fact that you were texting all night, showed up a half hour late, and really didn't engage me in conversation beyond one word answers. While it contributed to my lack of interest, it, unlike this conversation, doesn't make me think you are a bad person. And scene.
Thank you.
Now, I was better, by the way. FYI.
You were better at just reading straight your own voice? Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kevin Hart and every other voice actor.
You got it. You got it 100%. I learned from the best, man. I do what Kevin Hart does. Us short comedians have to stick together. I don't know why I called myself a comedian. But, so the reason I included this was Meninus is obviously making fun of her reaction. But I replied from the Midside Twitter account that this is just what happens when two stupid people interact. Because here's the deal. If he got coffee with her the night before and it's noon the next day and he's not interested, there's no reason for him to be texting her.
Yeah.
That's not polite. I think it's dishonest. To be like, oh, I had a great time, ha, ha, ha. When he didn't have a great time because she was texting the whole time, she wasn't talking to him, and she lied about her weight. And now I'm still getting Twitter fave stars because somebody replied to me and is like, oh, he was being polite to her. You obviously don't know what you're talking about. You must be rude. So apparently I am autistic.
I was about to ask if you're on the spectrum because Jesus Christ, Justin. I mean, I understand the not wanting to lie to each other, and I understand even the idea that these two people might be idiots. It's actually more likely than not. But if you sneeze and someone says bless you and you know they're an atheist, you scream at them, liar! Like, it's just fucking what you do. It's almost automatic at this point. You meet up with someone on a date, the next day you text them, great to meet you, had a good time, you know, have a good day. The end. And then even if you're not interested anymore, you just move on with your life. But that was almost like just an automatic reply. I mean, it's completely innocuous and harmless to me. And her reaction is insane. Insane reaction.
Her reaction is without a doubt insane. And I agree with your argument about the atheism and the sneezing and everything. The difference to me here is the time constraint and the content. If you need to be polite and message her, say, I appreciate you meeting with me, but I don't think we'll be seeing each other again, or I'm not interested in you. I get that. But to say you had a good time when you didn't, fuck off. If a girl said that to me and was like, I had a good time, and then I was like, oh, when are we going to do it again? And then she's like, actually, I didn't have a good time. I would be like, fuck you. Don't say you had a good time.
I mean, one, who knows what the fuck he's thinking? But two, you can say I had a good time, and then you can have had a good time for any number of reasons and still not want to go out with the person again. Like, I went on many a dates where I had a good time with the person, but I knew there wasn't going to be anything long term, and I didn't want to continue dating them. Oh my God. Thank you, Captain Robot.
I mean, maybe he just wasn't sure, and so once she rejected him, he was just kind of like, all right, like, yeah. I don't think there's any evidence that he did what she accused him of, which is just kind of rejecting her in response to her rejecting him.
Well, what you just
like, maybe
said
he just
is
wasn't sure. Like, he's just like, evidence. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's not sure and then she rejects him and he goes, yeah, I wasn't interested anyway, that's what she's saying.
But
yeah, right. Yeah. She's psycho, but like, yeah. I don't know. I resent the fact that these conversations end up on the internet at all, because even the people involved in the conversations don't have enough context to judge the other person, other than that we can judge her as psycho, like for going off like she did. But the initial conditions of the conversation, we just don't know, and they don't know. So why are we doing this? Why are we here, Justin?
What does it all mean? Here's why this isn't a version of the Tinder story where we had the pussy comitatus. It's because we don't know who these people are. We're discussing this in the abstract as should this be how you interact with each other versus, oh, fucking Sharon so-and-so is an evil, horrible person. Let's share her profile everywhere and tell people you shouldn't date her. And in fact, her job should fire her. And in fact, let's fucking burn her at the stake. Like it's just abstract conversation. If we knew who these people were, I wouldn't want to talk about this. But anyway, we live in a human world, Justin. And I hate to tell you this, but humans interact in these little white, ridiculous lies, even if they are lies, quote unquote, all the time. It's called basic human interaction. Because
they're pussies. Because they can't handle reality.
Oh, please. Oh, please.
I would much rather a woman say that she didn't have a good time. If she didn't have a good time, I would say, oh, thank you for your honesty. Good luck to you. But if she said, I had a good time, and then she didn't have a good time, I would say, fuck you, you cunt. Leave me alone.
I can't wait for the next time you sneeze so I can say something to the effect of, like, I hope you do not have a contagious disease.
No, that's the Dane Cook joke. He says, what do you say to an atheist when they sneeze? Nothing happens when you die. This is one of Dane Cook's best jokes.
It's not hard.
Next Reddit. And you guys are going to love this one. What can we do as a people to minimize the huge pay gap between a CEO and a normal working individual? And before you guys all respond, there's two things I want to say. I do appreciate that there were people who replied in the thread that said, why do we have to do anything? So thank you, people on Reddit, who replied with the correct response. And also, I do enjoy that this uses the article A for people. What can we do as A people to minimize? Like, we're all one singular person.
Yes, ant people.
It's not like we're the people where there's a bunch of us. It's like you're the people. It's like, no, we're A people. We're one person.
Yes, we are all of one mind on this, and there's to be no differentiation between what we think about this topic. So the answer is clearly fucking nothing. Although I did appreciate the first response and the highest voter response, which is start your own business and pay yourself as little as you want.
Yeah, that was good too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm under the impression, and maybe James disagrees, I don't know, maybe he agrees in a different way, that CEOs are oftentimes underpaid for the value they create. The most famous case of this, I think, in my mind, is Steve Jobs, and maybe Rockefeller, historically speaking. But, like, compared to not only the literal value of the company he built, but also add in the added value to our lives of having, the technology that Apple has brought to us over the years, from desktop computers to smartphones to streaming music, etc., he was vastly, vastly underpaid. Just shockingly underpaid, in my opinion. And it's not something where I think we have to correct it either way. It's what do these individuals, acting in their capacity as reasoning human beings, decide their value is in a marketplace, and what will the company decide that their value is in a marketplace, and can they find a happy medium? The end.
Yeah. James, anything to add to that?
Nothing other than, wait, why would I disagree with all of that? I agree with all of that. Yes and nothing. That's it. I agree.
I think we've added a new word to yes and nothing. So let's wrap this episode up. What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that in order to actually get human rights, or to be more specific, to get individual rights, I need to be nature. I need to identify as a shrub.
Wu Wei, man. Be a Taoist. James?
I learned that we just kind of need to butt out of, like, just not participate in these postings of these conversations we don't necessarily have the full context to. Even if someone is acting irrationally, I don't know if I learned it, but I've learned that I feel like there's something wrong with it. That it's too much of a he said, she said, gossipy sort of bullcrap deal.
Stop being like rational and mature, James. You're really bringing the show down right now.
Yes and sorry.
Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned two things this week. One, I learned that James needs to get his computer fixed. So if anyone out there thinks the editing is a little messed up this week, that is why. And the second thing is I learned a new term, which I absolutely love. Yes and nothing. So like whenever anyone comes and they start trying to reply to me or add to like something I said, I'm just going to go yes and nothing. Well, but I mean, with what you were saying, like that makes a lot of sense. But no, yes and nothing. Yes and nothing.
T-shirts. Well, if you learned yes and nothing this week, why don't you tell us on iTunes where you can leave a 5-star review with, there's something else they were supposed to leave a review for, right? Are they, what Muppet they would be? Oh no, what pleasure they would give and impress people with. That's right.
Yeah.
And you can also tell us on the Twitters, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat.
And you're supposed to snap us or tell us what, if you, what do you think of Justice League trailer? Is it better or worse? Yeah.
Yes. All in this kind of case, stuff. A dick pic is appropriate. Yes. Mm-hmm. So go all to those places. We love you on social media. That's fantastic. Thanks to the Liberty.me folks for syndicating us. Libertarianism. And what else? What else am I missing other than Patreon? Anything else? Oh, tell a friend. Not enough telling of friends. I mean, you have told friends and we like it. But let's double down on the friend telling. How about this? This week we need to make a friend and then specifically to tell them about the show. That's really...
Honestly, that with me, that happens more often than not. Like, I start talking to girls, and then I plug my podcast, and they were like, I thought you were going to ask for my number. No, I just wanted you to listen to my podcast.
A listen's a listen, bitch. Let's go. No wonder you get no dates.
Well, I mean, they're like, yes, they're like, yeah, I'll listen to your podcast. Yes, and here's my number. No, yes, and nothing. Yes, and listen to the show.
Priorities, yes, Daniel, priorities.
That's right. And then, of course, we have Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. Patreon's a platform where you can help us pay the bills, basically help us keep the lights on by donating money on a per piece of content basis. So it's not a monthly subscription. It's not a donation in the sense that, you know, you just give us money and we give you the finger. Basically, when we produce content, that's when money is debited from your account. Whatever amount you want, $1, 50 cents, $500, whatever it is, debited from your account when we create content. And in fact, we will hopefully be transitioning here to a model where we have even more Patreon-exclusive content. So if you want to be on the ground level of that, go to patreon.com/themidside and help us out. Helps us buy equipment, advertising, pops to give away, whole bunches of things. We really sincerely appreciate it. Makes us feel great. And then one more time, tell a friend. Thanks. Love you. Bye.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Much have such day.
My turn.